Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reed says, at a signing for Sharknado, so many people, my hand is killing me, LOL.
She's got a small hand, too.
Does she? Well, I would imagine so. She's probably a tiny person.
Yeah. I was going to open the podcast. The reason we talked about me doing the intro, the reason is because I was going to say, Zach Harper, you are the greatest trash talker of all time.
Gary Payton, that was a very Gary Payton speech. I really enjoyed it.
It was nice because it was kind of a balance between, it was like what Jordan's kind of should have been.
There was bravado, there was humility, there were a lot of like awkward moments. Like anytime you've seen, especially when it used to be Chris Webber and Gary Payton on the NBA TV Game Time show. And doing stuff, like there would be a lot of times where Gary would say something, but he'd stumble through it, and then the other two guys would have to try to figure out what the hell he said, and so people would just like kind of nervously laugh.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of that in it, only in a theater of like thousands of people, to where it was like you couldn't really hear the laughter, so there was just like this awkward silence. But it was very heartwarming because it was so Gary Payton.
I wouldn't say it was awkward. It was like close to awkward. It was approaching awkward.
Yeah.
It was like rapidly approaching awkward. But then he would swerve off and be kind of engaging for a second.
Yeah.
One thing you can always tell, it's interesting to me because, and players talk about like, I don't think about my legacy. I don't care about this kind of stuff. And yet they're always so moved by getting into this arbitrary Hall of Fame. That is not even for the NBA specifically, but it's a really big deal. And you can tell that it was a huge deal to Gary Payton. Big, big deal to him.
I've been thinking about this, and I don't know if it's just me like trying to go against like blowback to the Hall of Fame because NBA people seem to hate it. But like the more I think about it, like I'm just kind of okay with it. I wish it was done better. But in terms of like who gets in and stuff, like it is a pretty decent job of really taking a picture of the history and the growth of the league. It's like, well, why is Bill Sharman in? Like, why is he in? He would never be a top player in the league today. It's like, right, but he was a top player in the league at some point, and that matters. Like, would George Mikan be that good in today's, if you just transplanted him from 1948 and you put him in today's game, would he be a top 15 center? Like, probably not. He probably isn't mobile enough. He probably isn't skilled enough, but he dominated that era, and it was everything is like a bridge to where we got now. And so I'm kind of just appreciating it more. Now, I've never been to the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts, and I've heard it's a little, you know, disappointing just from some very serious hoop heads. So I'll take their word for it, and maybe I would be disappointed if I went. But the idea of it, I'm warming up to more and more. Because I used to be all about, like, screw this, we need an NBA Hall of Fame. And now I'm not so sure anymore.
Well, few things. One, speaking to your point, if you're a listener and you're freaking out over the McCann comment, go do a basketball reference comparison of Larry Sanders and Bill Russell and look at their per 36s, and then I'll just be over here in the corner just waiting for you to go take a look at that. Like, there is, and I'm not at all saying, because I understand the context, but that's kind of the point, is context matters a lot, and we don't know a lot of the answers to these questions, and that doesn't mean that we shouldn't ask them. It doesn't mean that.
Sure.
It means that you shouldn't come out firing with fiery opinions. It means you should be like, "Hey, let's talk about this, and we can have a discussion." I don't have a. There's a very big distinction here. I don't have a problem with the Naismith Hall of Fame existing, and not only that, I encourage and want it to exist. I feel it should exist. I think it's important for the sport to have a conceptual arc covenant of the game, like. It needs to have something that covers women's influence there, that covers like stuff like, and guys are gonna get mad at this, but like Russ Granick, like the dude had a lot to do with the league.
Yeah.
Just had a huge impact. He contributed to the sport of basketball. Like David Stern absolutely needs to go in. He would go to an NBA one too. Rick Pitino absolutely deserves to be in a basketball Hall of Fame.
Right.
Because he contributed so much to the sport. My problem is that college basketball has a Hall of Fame in Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
My thing is, and you know me, man, everyone gets a trophy. So, like, college basketball, like, basketball Hall of Fame, college basketball Hall of Fame, pro basketball Hall of Fame, done. And then we can spend more time talking about the ABA and really delving into what that league gave us. And we can look at those pre-NBA leagues and the impact that they have. If you haven't yet, please go follow Curtis Harris at Pro Hoops History. The man is – history is his business. He's a graduate student in history. You need to go check him out. He does the work to know about these guys.
Yeah, he's phenomenal.
A lot of us will have opinions. Curtis knows his ish. Like, he knows what he's doing. And it's – he has such a phenomenal viewpoint on everything that has to do with the league. And he was there this weekend and had some really great insights on it. So go follow him. He's fantastic. But, yeah, I think it's great that we have – like, I think that international basketball should have this place in America where it's recognized for – or not even America, it could be anywhere, but wherever the Basketball Hall of Fame is, like, there needs to be a function to recognize international achievements in basketball because the sport is that big of a deal
right.
in the world. I just want an NBA one because the NBA is in and of itself a driving force of basketball culture.
Sure. I mean, I don't know at this point that I think I just said, like, yeah, the NBA should have one. That would be cool. But now I don't even know. Like, if it's just an all-encompassing basketball one and you got rid of the College Basketball Hall of Fame, I would be okay with that. Like, that would probably be fine to me. Like, for example, I knew a little bit about E.B. Henderson, who went in. He's known as the grandfather of black basketball. Like, he is credited with introducing the game of basketball to African Americans in Washington, D.C. in, like, the early 1900s, like 1904. And I knew a little bit about him, but in writing just a little brief post yesterday about all of the people going in, like, I did quite a bit of reading about him yesterday morning. And without the Basketball Hall of Fame, without him being recognized, long overdue, but still he's finally getting recognized, like, I wouldn't have learned so much about him, like, creating the International Athletic Association and stuff like that. And for that, like, I'm very thankful for the Basketball Hall of Fame and at least the concept of it, because you do go, like, not everyone has access to a Curtis Harris. And so you do, although they should. And so you do get to, like, maybe go research a little bit if you have the time or if you have the inkling to do it. And that was cool.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think these kind of things are really awesome. History is great. Kids. Like, I mean, you know, I'm all about that. I think a lot of it also, if you're a person that has exceptionally high standards for who should go in the Hall of Fame, you're both going to prefer the Basketball Hall of Fame and dislike it because they're more likely to let in people based off of accomplishments
right.
and not success, right, in the historical concept. But also, the guys that get in from the current modern era, the bar is exceptionally high, right?
Yes.
That's one of the things that I have a problem with is I'm always like, why are we spending time – like, I understand that these people made these contributions, and I want them to have a space, but I also want somewhere for contributions of players that were really great but not at an elite level. I believe that there's – and that depends on what your definition of, like, what Hall of Fame should be, and that's arbitrary and up for debate and those kind of things. But I don't think it would be bad for us to have this separate entity to kind of consider it.
You know, I actually like the fact that the modern players are going to have a harder time getting in for the simple fact that – the bar keeps getting raised, and I think it should because the game keeps evolving and getting better. So if things are getting better, then you should keep adjusting your kind of expectations and your criteria. So, you know, someone like Roger Brown, who was a really great forward in the ABA, a guard forward in the ABA, you know, during the 60s and 70s, like, he gets to get in, but maybe, I don't know, like, let's just say, for example, Chauncey Billups doesn't get in. And some people are like, that's crazy. Chauncey Billups should be in. Look what he did during his time. And it's like, right, but the game is so much better than it was in the ABA era that I'm okay with guys missing the cut now because the expectations should just be higher. And I get that not everyone's going to agree with that. And to your point earlier about, like, compare Larry Sanders and Bill Russell's per 36, and I know, like, and you said, like, context matters and all that. Those kind of time travel things just are crazy to me because it's like, Larry Sanders does not exist today without Bill Russell 40 years ago, 50 years ago, you know? And so, like, it bothers me when people are like, look, Bill Russell today would just be Ben Wallace. It's like, you don't know that.
No, you don't know.
Simply don't know that. Maybe he would.
Now,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with being like, well, when you look at it, if you're able to be like, well, I watched a lot of video of him, and to me it doesn't really seem like his athleticism was superior and that a lot of his domination at that time was based off of the fact that he was simply more athletic and was willing and able to do these innovative things that are no longer in that context. I think there's conversation to be had there. I'm not all slamming Bill Russell. He's amazing and a Hall of Famer, all-timer, one of the five best players of all time. I'm simply trying to point out that I guess my big thing is just that I want to celebrate people being great. That's kind of where it gets to. I want to celebrate people being great. And so if there are more people now that are great and that makes it harder, I want us to celebrate more of them because they're still great. And
yeah,
so,
that's fair.
And that's all it really comes down to. And I think both sides have a really reasonable point, and neither one of us can make money off of it, so we're not going to be able to make it have any sort of impact.
Exactly. What I'm getting at here, or what I think you're getting at here, is that you think Larry Sanders is already a Hall of Famer.
Larry Sanders is definitely a Hall of Famer. Well, here's a great example of how my brain works. If you ask me, if I step out of myself and you ask me, like, Sean Marion, I'm going to be like, well, no, he great player, really contributed a lot, but no. But then there's part of me that's like, he was so vital to so many really great teams. He did so much.
He did.
Why doesn't Sean Marion get in?
You know?
And then again, I step outside of myself and I'm like, no, Matt, no. He doesn't get in. And I'm like, but he should. It's Matrix. It'd be so cool.
Yeah.
His Hall of Fame speech would be fantastic. Like, you know.
And I love the fact that Grant Hill is probably going to get into the Hall of Fame because you can add on his Olympic stuff, his Duke stuff. Like,
yeah.
Like Grant Hill deserves to be in a Basketball Hall of Fame. Like, he is that type of all-time talent and player. And his first, like, 7 years in the league were – or 5 or 6, 7 years in the league were unreal. Like, he was the bridge to the next era. And then, you know, his ankle craps out on him and he has a staph infection, all that stuff. But, like, I think I'm okay with, like, being able to tack on his other stuff in order to get him in because he is that important.
Well, I think it's cool, too, that there are going to be these players that are locks and you can look at them and there are people that are going to say, I remember him from high school. Like, that's what I remember is I saw him dominate at the high school level, Cyril Hill, but whoever. And then, you know, I saw the people are going to be like, oh, I saw him in college. Like, do you remember how great he was in that Final Four game? Like, do you remember that game against North Carolina? Like, all these kind of these moments are etched in people's memories in very important ways. And then in the NBA, they have their own kind of legacy. And a lot of times that actually I think it's downplayed a lot because of the forgetfulness of the regular season.
Yeah.
And Tracy McGrady's probably a great example of that, right? Like,
right.
I mean, good God. Like if you pay attention to the regular season and you have any sort of understanding of how hard it can – like, you and I are two that will understand and will be fast to admit there are times when neither team can give a damn.
Right.
But there are also those special games when you can tell that both teams are like, no, this one matters, you know? Like, any single time Indiana plays Miami, like, no, there's not going to be any lack of effort from Indiana in those games.
Right.
And remembering those moments, you do remember. I mean, for example, if you ask me my quintessential Kevin Durant game, I'm not even kidding. My quintessential Kevin Durant game is I saw him in person at the Irwin Center in Texas when he was there. I lived in Austin the same time he was there, that 1 year he was there. And I saw him drop 35, I think, I remember it was 30 plus on the Tigers, and he just absolutely destroyed him. It was amazing to see this guy shoot. And I turned to my friend and was like, this guy's going to be an NBA Hall of Famer. And that was a ridiculous claim, but still.
But it's going to end up being correct.
But it's going to end up being correct. And you know, that's my memory of what Kevin Durant was. Now, that's not to say that Durant should go into the Hall for his college accomplishment, but still, just to say that there's these little moments and they matter to different people. And so there's a lot of it comes down to. That's why I think the Hall is great, because it does recognize greatness. I just want more ways to recognize greatness.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know what to do there because we had a review saying no more personal stories and no more trying to be funny. But you told a personal story about NBA analysis. So I don't know if I should edit that out. I don't really know what to do there. I gotta admit, I'm at a loss.
We do want to thank everybody for your iTunes ratings and encourage those of you that haven't, please go. We are abysmally low compared to the amount of effort and exposure that we get, and you guys seem to really like the podcast. We get a lot of positive feedback on this podcast.
Numbers are good.
We want to keep doing it. We want to be able to do it better. We want to be able to get better guests and better equipment and stuff like that. So, you know, please send us reviews, subscribe on iTunes, give us that kind of support. We really appreciate it. I know it kind of seems like there's a lot of times you're like, oh, they don't need me. Like, I'm telling you, we need you. I'm Uncle Sam right now. I want you to leave a podcast review.
And again, I just want you to download but never listen.
Never listen.
Just never listen to it. I don't want you to know that we have horrible personal stories.
So... Derrick Rose dribbled.
I didn't actually click on the link. I just saw in our email chain. I saw the headline. Derrick Rose played against a samurai?
Yeah, they're billing it as he dunks on a samurai, but it's just he casually crossovers and dribbles through two of them and then dunks with them not defending at the rim at all. So that does not qualify as dunking on a samurai to me. But yeah, there's a little bit of samurai action in there. He was in Japan. It's really hard because when any NBA player is playing against a non-NBA person, the level of speed and aggression, even with them at 50%, is going to be so great you can't really tell.
Yeah,
I will say just if I kind of black out everything else on the video and just focus on Rose, the crossover looks good. He looks like he's planting well. The big thing on the dunk, he dunks and there's no effort there whatsoever for him in terms of, you know how you want it to be that effortless, he could just kind of glide up there and dunk. Yeah. That's what he does. There's no, I got to rear up for this, I got to get my, he doesn't have to explode to get the dunk, which is really good.
I just want him to do what he did to Goran Dragic to everybody.
Right.
That's one of my favorite like in-game dunks. And it's just basic. And it's on Goran Dragic. Like, you should be able to dunk on Goran Dragic if you're an NBA player, but I just liked it. And every time I mute Stacey King on the YouTube video because he ruins it.
You're working on a little feature that I don't want to ruin. We'll tease it, though, taught with videos of NBA players dunking. I do want to say I made this comment a couple of days ago. I think Rose is the best two-handed dunker in the league.
Currently?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Kemp's probably all time.
Yeah, it's definitely Kemp all time. Westbrook probably doesn't do it enough, but I feel like when he does it, they're pretty spectacular. But yeah, I would say Rose is the best two-handed dunker, for sure.
When he does that, when he does like the crossover, split the lane, jump stop, leap into the air, going sideways from left to right, throw it down, two hands moving away. Oof.
It's pretty special. It's pretty nasty.
Yeah, that's pretty wonderful. We get to see him in like 2 months, man.
I know.
It's coming. Anyway.
Maybe.
We're catching up today.
We are. We're done with our off-season reports in terms of writing. But because of my travel schedule, we didn't get to do podcasts for them the first week of the off-season reports. So we've got the Pacific Division this week.
And so this way I can get Suns fans and Clippers fans and Kings fans to quit asking me about when are you going to do the podcast?
And Lakers fans could stop asking that we don't review their summer.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of please don't. You guys aren't going to do a Lakers podcast, right? Because you don't need to do that.
Right. So today
we're getting late in the season. You still want to be relevant. Right. You know, come on.
So we're doing the Clippers today.
Yeah.
They were active this offseason.
Yeah, they did some stuff. I guess let's start here. How many wins over Vinny Del Negro? Wins above replacement coach is Doc Rivers good for?
I would think 6-7. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot to people, but I feel like that's actually a pretty big jump.
It sounds like a lot to me.
And it's not that Vinny's bad. I just think that – I think Doc can kind of keep them out of that malaise that kind of falls over this team in February and March.
So if they stay healthy, are you projecting this roster to be as good as last year, better than last year?
Better than last year, although I'm worried about the defense. And yes, Doc Rivers has coached some amazing defenses before, but he had the tools to really execute that. And unless DeAndre Jordan really steps up his defensive impact, and not that he's not a good defender, but like it's really got to step up to cover this team. Like this team is just, they were so bad defensively at the end of games that they didn't address that at all, and that's what I'm worried about.
They won 56 games last year.
Yeah.
Do you think they crack 60 this year? Let's stop for a second. Let's say, are you with me that I believe about 5 games a year are basically dependent upon, it's basically like random bounces that go in the final minute of a game? Like last second buzzer beaters, crazy turnovers, weird calls, stuff that happens.
Yeah, that's probably, I would say, 5 is probably about right.
So, and it can go positive or negative. Like, some teams absolutely lost all 5. Some teams won all 5. It's kind of in the middle. But let's kind of set that aside for a second. And let's say that they stay healthy, which is obviously a big thing.
Sure.
And let's say they play out. So, for whatever reason, whether it's with San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Golden State, whoever, they're trying to get the number one seed, and they decide to play out, and they're not resting. Now, that's almost impossible, I would say that that will not happen. If they win 58 games, Paul's resting the final week of the season.
Sure.
But let's say they go all out. What is their maximum win total?
I think they could probably get 60.
Even?
Yeah. That's a lot of wins.
It's a lot of wins.
60 is a lot. Like, I think that's their ceiling for a regular season. But I think that, like, we've just seen so much of this from Chris Paul that he is all about pacing himself throughout a season.
Yeah.
I don't see him going all out in, you know, February, late January, early March. Like, I just don't see that. And maybe he won't have to. But you're not going to see a 96 Bulls effort where they're trying to kill every game. Like, not that the Clippers aren't trying to win every game, but there will be nights where they go, eh, I'll pull back. Like, it's not necessary.
I think they probably learned, not even learned. How can I put this? There's a difference between learning something and then not feeling like you need to prove it anymore. So
right.
They've done a lot of showboating over the last 2 years. Like, they were one of those teams that would really make a point to you that they were beating you.
Right.
Just bench celebrations, on-court celebrations, the whole way. And, I mean, it got under a lot of people's skin. Like, they are one of the teams that gets mentioned. Golden State, I feel, might be – they were kind of bad last year. They might be better this year because I think Andre Iguodala is going to be like, no, we don't do that. Like, Iguodala is very, no, don't do – you don't want to do that.
I feel a lot of that stemmed from Jarrett Jack. Jarrett Jack talks a lot of trash on the court.
Well, Jarrett Jack, Draymond Green, Kent Bazemore. Like, those three guys.
I don't feel like Bazemore actually affects it. Like, he's just celebrating on the bench, but I think he would celebrate if you, like, gave someone a cup of water.
Right.
But Draymond Green, for sure. Draymond talks a lot.
Yeah, so I think that there's probably going to be a little bit of a, let's take this, not more seriously, but let's change our approach. We've seen this, I mean, we've seen it before. Like, the Celtics are actually a really great example, which is funny because they were such a veteran group when they got together. But 2007, 2008, they were pretty insufferable.
Oh, like, yeah. They talked a lot of trash.
Yeah. I mean, it was, we are here. I loved it. And then the year after, they were very much like, we don't have anything left to prove for the champions.
Right.
We don't have anything left to prove. So I don't have to sit here and run my mouth at you. I can beat you and move on with my life. Like, I don't care. You reach a point where you don't care. The Heat are there. The Heat were actually, I think, a lot like that in 2010, and then, or 2010, 2011, and then 2011, 2012, there was a difference in kind of in how they approached it, and you saw it with LeBron stopped the chalk toss. They weren't doing nearly as much of the dancing. Like, LeBron learned how to kind of have fun, but not be obnoxious.
Right. You weren't seeing like it wasn't that long between. Like, he and Danny Green and Boobie Gibson, like, dancing on the sideline during blowouts, and then when he just kind of stopped doing everything.
Now, I want to note here, I don't think that there's anything wrong with it. I think it's funny. I like it the same way you do.
Yeah.
I just know that there is kind of – I've seen enough that it does help motivate the opponent, and it can come back to bite you in the ass.
That's the thing I love about it, though, because I always just think, like – if you want someone to stop showboating, like at a college level, it's not always fair. Like, right. The resources allocated and everything, like, it's just not always fair. And so I'm against running up the score in like college football or college basketball or whatever. But when you're pros, everyone basically has the same playing field. I feel like, and I always think that if like you're a professional, you want them to stop showboating, stop them. Like, you want a team to stop celebrating every dunk, stop giving up dunks. Like, you want a team to not talk trash every time they stop you in the backfield or they sack the quarterback, stop letting them. Like, I think there's a certain point when you become a professional where it's like, well, if you're tired of it, make them pay for it. And that's what I love about it in the NBA. It was like, okay, I thought it was ridiculous that Dwayne Wade got kind of like lambasted for a whole. He was the one that held his hand up, right, against Dallas game two.
Yeah.
Like he over celebrates, like he holds his shooting pose after the shot, and then it kind of pissed off Dallas or whatever, and people freaked out about it. I was like, really, that was enough to make you mad? But it made the Mavericks mad, like and that's what was important. And then the Mavericks came back and made him pay for it, even if it was, in my mind, it was such a small slight. They took it the way they were supposed to, and it motivated them, and they kind of shut everybody up with it, you know.
The Mavericks were really that season. The Mavericks were the ultimate make you pay team, because they did the same thing to the Thunder.
Oh god,
the Thunder were the Thunder had Nate Robinson on that bench, and they were insufferable that season. And I say this as a Grizzlies fan who was just like going out of his mind. But that was the thing; like Memphis couldn't make him pay for it. Memphis played him well, but they did. They got clocked in a few of those games and just got the score ran up on them by the Thunder knocking down threes. But the Mavericks were like, "That's cute, kids. You go ahead with that. That's fine." And with the Heat, like it wasn't just the hand holding up. You've got Rio freaking out when he hit that three, even though I think Rio kind of deserved to. That was his moment. And then you've got them, LeBron and Wade. I was there when they were making fun of Dirk's cough. I was walking down the highway, hallway behind him, and I could tell you, like, they were making fun of him. Like, that was their – there is – it's weird covering them. I don't know them, but you are in control of your faculties when you're around the media, so you're choosing what you let out and what you don't. There was a huge change in their attitude from 2011 when I covered them to 2012 and then 2013. Like, it was just not the same at all. They were not the same team. So I think with the Clippers this year, they may have actually – I think getting beaten by the Grizzlies really may have helped them kind of understand that, oh, okay. Because I think that may be part of – and this is – okay, this is like really out there speculation. So get ready. Cause
I'm strapped in.
I honestly think that was a huge part of Chris Paul's problem with Blake Griffin was that Paul knows how this league works and wants it to be taken seriously. You should expect to win. You shouldn't celebrate when you win because you're supposed to. And you celebrate when you win that title. That's when you take. That's when you freak out and you dance. That's when you celebrate.
Well, especially
Lob City bothered him, I think, from that perspective.
Yeah, especially like. You look at who he came from playing with. David West is not a celebratory guy. David West is a lunch pail, hard hat kind of guy.
Well, and David West was the one that in that 2011 series with the 2012 series with the Heat when they won that game. I think it was game two.
Yeah.
And the Pacers players were celebrating. David West like was grabbing them by the back of their jersey and saying, "Get your ass in the locker room."
Right. It doesn't mean like Blake Griffin isn't a good professional or he isn't a good player or he's overrated or whatever. It just means like there's a certain jump from highlight factory to proven winner that Blake is trying to take, and a lesson like that is kind of necessary. Like, no, you're not guaranteed to get out of the first round. It is going to take hard work, and not that he doesn't work hard, but it takes a little more focus in the playoffs. And I hope that was a lesson he really absorbed, and it's something Chris Paul and the other veterans could pass on to him, because it is important for young guys to learn that. Like, there are certain young guys who never really learn that, and then they become like almost these, like Monte Ellis at this point is a caricature of himself, right? In terms of I don't know that he'll ever get it. Maybe he does get it and he just doesn't care. Like, whatever the reason is, like, Monte Ellis is someone that you can kind of just expect to act certain ways, and it happens. Like, I don't know that there was ever growth in terms of learning what it takes to win. And maybe that'll actually, maybe that could, I guess it could still happen in Dallas, like with that environment. You never know, but you don't want someone to kind of just become like a caricature of themselves. And Blake, I don't think Blake Griffin will be that way, but like it wouldn't, there are scenarios where I could see him like, never fully grasping it, you know?
Yeah, a couple of things. I can definitely see that happening, and those are good points. I mean, part of it, he's 24 years, 169 days. So, there's, by the way, there's your day reference.
Jesus.
So, my point, though, is, you know, he's going to mature, and he's going to come to understand these things. I think part of it also is, if you're a guy that likes fun, the NBA season bores the crap out of you.
Oh, like, yeah.
You're playing all these, especially if you're. I think it's worse if you're winning. I think if you're losing, you're just depressed and you're trying to like separate yourself from it, and you know you can't really talk. But if you're winning, like we are winning. Let's have some fun. Like, let's make it enjoyable to play basketball. You can't be like, oh hey, we're 7-30. Let's have some fun, guys. You know, that doesn't really work.
Right.
So I think that he can definitely improve as he gets older, and get to where he can be. He'll have that kind of attitude. And what you're talking about too, in terms of maturing as a veteran and all that, that's a lot of what I think that he gets criticized for not having in his game but I think it's so early, it's really unfair to kind of characterize
them. Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. I think there is way too much scrutiny that goes into like Blake Griffin. I think it's simply because it's almost like that Dwight Howard thing of he makes highlights, but he seems to really want to have fun in everything he's doing, and it bothers people for some reason, which is weird. I get it, but like it's just weird to me that it bothers people so much.
Well, and they want him to have this really strong veteran skill set off the bat, and I don't really know how you get that, you know? And
yeah, that's part of just like number one players and guys who are exciting early in their career. It immediately becomes, well, he's only going to get better. Like, and I think we've said this a few times, like if Blake Griffin stayed the exact same amount of a good player he is, that's a brilliant sentence, by the way. If he stayed the same, like the same
level
of impact that he is now, for the next 10 years, that's a phenomenal career. Mm-hmm. Like that's a really phenomenal career. But you see someone who's good, or like who's kind of special early on, and you think, all right, this guy can be an all-time great. So keep improving, and then you don't see that immediate jump from year to year to year. And it's like, okay, well now he's overrated and he sucks. It's like because of your expectations for him. Like I don't know if that's fair.
You realize people forget this stuff. Dirk Nowitzki used to get.
Oh hammered. My god, the Dirk Nowitzki conversation drove me insane.
And remember, a large part of it was like his rebounding. Like he's never had double digit rebounding in his career.
Oh my
and now,
god.
If you're a double digit rebounder that scores 20 points a game, you're like a top 15 player in this league.
Right.
Like it's absurd. Like, you know, he averaged 9.7 in 05. But in general, the knock on Nowitzki was he's not a great rebounder. And it's like he's like one of the best scoring players I've ever seen.
Right. He's like one of the most unique scorers you can imagine. Like a 7-foot player who can score in the post, in the mid post, face up, shoot 3-pointers, like money at the line, and it's like, nah, he's not that good. I was like, are you high? Like, what is wrong with you?
And a lot of it, I think, with Griffin is, I think one of the reasons that you and I are big on him is that we see the same kind of things where if you watch him, you go, oh, that post footwork looked good. It doesn't matter how many points he scored.
Right.
It's, oh, that post footwork looked good. He can, like, that's a building block. He can improve on that. He can use that. He's going to get there. To me, I look at his skill set and I go, there's every reason to believe that he will get better and that he's going to get better. Like you said, even if he doesn't, that's okay. But he reworked his shot completely last year and it did look better. And you say, yeah, but his percentage, I don't care. It's his first year. I worry about where Blake Griffin's jump shot's going to be when he's 27.
Right.
That's what I worry about. I worry about where his rebounding is going to be when he's 27. That's what I worry about. Like, that's my concern. And if he doesn't get there and he's just a complimentary guy that's able to completely dunk on anyone that moves off the pick and roll, that's still a pretty great, effective player.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like people are like, all he does is dunk. It's like, I don't know. He's got a pretty decent, like, form now on the pick and pop. He's got – I think he's got a really above-average post game. I don't think they go to it enough, and I don't know what that is. Stylistically, maybe that'll change with Doc a little bit, but I think he has a very good post game. Like I kind of feel like I'm watching Dwight Howard in 2009 in a sense, where people are like, oh, he has no post game. I'm like, then what the hell am I seeing? Because I see something. Like this is driving me crazy, and so I think, and the thing I liked about him is like 2 years ago, he would go through, like he would start dribbling through his legs at, you know, 18 feet while facing up, doing all these things, and then he wouldn't do anything with it. And people are like, oh, look at his handle. It's so good. I'm like, yeah, it's fantastic when he's standing still, but he's not doing any. Like, he's not creating drives off of it. Like, he's not doing anything with it. So it doesn't, like, that's just a, he's just, like, treading water there. And then last year, he actually started attacking the basket off of his handle, and that's where it's like, okay, skill set improvement. Like, that, and that's kind of what you're talking about with the jumper. It's like, yes, the results aren't there yet, but the form is better. If he jumped up like 6% on his 16 to 23 foot jumper next year, I don't think you would be surprised, because you've seen the transformation in the form, and then you expect eventually results will come from that.
We promise we will actually talk about their offseason moves in a second.
Yes.
Last thing on Griffin. I wrote a thing this weekend because Hakeem said he wanted to work with them.
Yeah.
And I was kind of – Hakeem Olajuwon is in my top three of probably favorite players all time. Well, top four outside of Travis Diener. But
of course.
Top five, Marcus Thornton. Sorry, forgot. But and I, my thing was via Synergy last year, Blake was 13th in minimum three posted up attempts per game, and he had a really decent amount of them. He had 8.3. To let you know how good he was last year, points per possession, Carmelo Anthony was 0.965, Blake Griffin was 0.964. This is post in the with the pass, so
right.
This counts him passing out of it. And both those guys have really great shooters on the outside, but still, I think that's good, right? You want a guy that's able to pass to the outside shooter and create an open look. That's a good thing. So he's really effective in this set. He's right there with Carmelo Anthony, who I consider to be one of the better post players in the league when he decides to use it.
Sure.
And so, obligatory Knicks mention. So I think that Griffin's post play is really there. I want to see Hakeem work with him on defense. That's where I want to see him work. And work with him on rebounding, on positioning, on all the things that made Hakeem great outside of just the Dream Shake. I want to see him work on those things and not necessarily work on, you know, the fadeaway jumper out of the two-step post move.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. You know, you asked earlier, like, what's their ceiling for wins, or how many wins do you think they get moving from Vinny to Doc? I think that what's funny is I think that they probably win about 58 games this year, but it's a much better team than it was last year, who won 56. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I think even just a 2-win improvement, people might think, that's about the same as last year, but I think that they'll be a much better team even with just a slight improvement in regular season record.
I was going to say the exact same thing. I think that if they win 56 games next year, it's like, that's really great. Because I think they could lose fewer games and still be a much better team, just because I think that they'll coast more. They won't have kind of the ups. They had really high highs last year and then really low lows. And we always talked about the course of the season. They were so great in November, and really in March was when everyone was like, oh. It was funny because it started as like, this doesn't look great. And then it was, okay, there's something wrong with the Clippers. And then it was, okay, the defense is really a problem. If this is not just them coasting, if they have this defense in the playoffs, they're going to really have an issue. And then they won the first two games of that playoff series, and I was like, oh, well, they're fine. I really thought they were fine.
Right.
I thought they were totally okay. And then the Grizzlies found a jump shot. Mike Conley was awesome. So
it's funny that, like, defensively, we saw so many problems, but they were a good defensive team throughout the entire year. It's just at the end of games, it fell apart.
They had, I think it was that they have ways that you could exploit them. I think that's the best way to kind of describe it.
Yeah.
They have ways that you could, if you got them out of their system and what they want to do, then they have real issues.
Sure. I think that, I think with them, I love the moves they made. I mean, you gave them a B in your offseason report for them. And I actually thought that was low because I looked, all right, they added Redick, who's just going to be phenomenal for them. They added Dudley, who might be even better for them. Collison is the new backup point guard, and I actually like him in a backup point guard role. And I look, I'm like, I just think this team is so much improved. Now, there is a huge, huge question with interior depth. Like, the depth inside and their ability to defend with it, you know, inside is definitely going to be tested. I mean, Ryan Hollins might be a regular guy for them, which is a bit of a problem. But I still think, like, they're so good on the wings now that I just don't know that it'll be a problem that often.
I guess here's what I would say. One, this is the first one I think I did.
Yeah.
This is the first one, so you're still getting your – I had no kind of curve, right?
Sure.
And then two, I think I'd probably bump it to a B+ upon reflection. I think a lot of it is I always address, did you take care of your needs? And to me, it's like, did they make their team better? Absolutely. Did they get better where they needed to? Not so much, because they had wings last year. Scoring from the outside is not this team's problem. And there's an argument to be said that, look, you can't count on Matt Barnes to shoot as well from the perimeter as he did last year. I think that's a decent argument, because that was a part of my big concern with them was – teams are going to make them into Matt Barnes has to beat us, and that's exactly what the Grizzlies did, and it didn't work. Like, right. That was the whole thing, is we're gonna make it to where Matt Barnes, who was fantastic for them last year, he was so good for them, we're gonna make it to where he has to beat us, and then he couldn't, and that really gave them problems on offense. But I just look at it, and I'm like, they had Jamal Crawford, Billups okay, you don't like Willie Green okay. I always think that you can find shooters, but they really needed to figure out some better options for depth down low. And maybe the thought process was, we expect DeAndre to get better.
Yeah.
Everyone's concerned about him, but we expect him to get better. We think he will get better. And most importantly, we have confidence that he will get better. So if DeAndre makes that jump, then they're fine. Then this was an A-plus year for them. They got Doc Rivers, J.J. Redick, Jared Dudley. Done. Darren Collison is icing on the cake. Great. But if DeAndre is still a year away, which is not good, he probably needs to get there now. If he hasn't made that big leap, if Blake doesn't get better in some of those areas that he needs to, even though you and I do believe that he should in the short term with what they're demanding of their team in terms of being a title contender, I really wanted to see them do better in terms of addressing those needs. I wanted to see them pursue some interior adjustments and get some different weapons in there. Even if it was just a rebounding guy with a little bit of range on his jumper, that's fine. I just needed to see something in that area, and instead they made such a big push for, you know, we got to get wing upgrades. I'm like, you have Chris Paul and Jamal Crawford. You're okay. Like, it's going to be okay.
I don't know. I mean,
you know,
I think that part of that is, I don't know that there was a wing or there was an interior guy that they necessarily thought we have to have that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and
they seemed, I mean, they were hot to trot for Redick last year.
Yeah.
They were chasing wings pretty much consistently through the trade deadline, and then free agency, all of the rumors were tied around wings. OJ Mayo and
right.
like a bunch of other guys.
I mean, I guess you could say, like, oh, why didn't they go after Sam Dallenberg? I think they did go after Marcus Camby. I remember that rumor, but I don't know how real that was. Also, it's Marcus Camby right now in the year 2013, so who knows? But, like, I think there were...
Sounds like a sci-fi, like, feature. Like Marcus Camby, 2013.
Right. He actually might be the new RoboCop. which I am incredibly excited for, by the way.
We'll finish on that in a minute.
Yeah. I think that the options that were out there weren't great, like, at least within their price range. So if they just decided to not commit money to that, and maybe they'll try to address it down the road, I'm okay with that. Like, Caron Butler, I didn't think was very good last year, although he did shoot really well from three.
But he wasn't great.
And then you've got, like, you know, the Chauncey Billups-Willie Green combination. Like, and to replace that with Jared Dudley and J.J. Redick, I think that's an enormous upgrade on the wing. And I know you do too, but, like, I think that's enough of an upgrade on the wing to where you've kind of taken away, like, those nights when Matt Barnes has to save you
I agree.
From that position.
It helps them a lot offensively, and Redick is a good Redick and Dudley are good defenders, yeah. So and they improved in a lot of areas.
Yeah. And then the next jump I have is, like, all people did last year was kill Vinny Del Negro for his end of game, the way he treated end of games, and now they've got Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
And so I guess it just depends on, like, how much do you believe coaching at the end of games matters, even when you have Chris Paul on the court, because maybe it doesn't matter that much. Maybe Chris Paul is enough of a coach on the court to kind of fix that. But if Vinny Del Negro was the scapegoat last year, and let's just pretend it was 100% justified, to go from that to Doc Rivers, I think that's a huge improvement.
I agree. I think an A for me would require that I looked at them and went, wow, that was a phenomenal offseason.
Sure.
And I look at this and go, I think the best way to describe it is, I wouldn't say it was a phenomenal offseason, but it didn't need to be. They're already a 56-win team.
Yeah, that's true.
This team was too – a few things go right for them, and that team wound up as the 3 seed, and then they got to play the Warriors, and that would have been interesting. But, God, that'd be a fun series next year. Anyway,
that would be really fun.
They don't really have to improve that much. Rivers, I have so many conflicting. I am a torrent of emotion about Doc Rivers, honestly, because he's undeniably he's gotten so good at drawing up out of bounds plays,
yeah,
end of game situations, tactical situations, he's fantastic. He is one of the top three best motivators in the league, if not the best. He is beloved by his players and almost never loses anyone. I don't know anybody, you know, Rondo still loves the man. Like, right. Still, as complicated as a relationship is, there's a lot of love there. Kevin Garnett would literally throw himself in front of a bus for him.
Yes.
The guy's history before he had KG, Pierce, Allen was not great.
But he didn't have anything, and I just think, like, we expect, like, all of these players grow as players throughout a career, hopefully. I think coaches do the same. Like, it's possible he realized how much he screwed up early on and fixed it, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, I think it's a huge improvement. I guess I'm not as crazy about it, just because there's a point where, depending on who you are, you only have so much control. Like, Popovich has all of the control in the Spurs organization, but lots of coaches are great coaches,
right,
that don't have total control of their teams. And, you know, this team's going to be in Chris Paul's hands, and that's what's going to be the biggest determining factor in all of this, is Chris Paul.
Like, you know,
Chris Paul is going to decide a lot.
We talked about how they didn't address interior depth. I actually take that back. I forgot they got Byron Mullins, so they're fine.
Their garbage time unit, what, Byron, Hollins.
Oh, you're going to put them on the court together?
Yeah, Byron, oh, Hollins.
Jamal. Jamal always plays in garbage time.
Jamal, Matt Barnes maybe at the three.
Yeah.
And then...
Collison.
And then Collison.
That could be fun.
The team's better than the Bobcats. That's better. That team's better. The team's better than the Suns. That team probably wins 20 games.
Oh, my God.
Give me some bad teams this year.
Oh, no. Let's put Reggie Bullock in there instead of Matt Barnes.
Ooh. Yeah. There you go. What, I was thinking about this. Can they go to a small ball? I mean, that's the kind of weird thing, is Blake is such a big part of their team, but I'm also thinking, I'm like, couldn't you go, in certain situations, Paul, Redick, Dudley, Barnes, Griffin?
You could. I could even see like a 3 or 4 minute stint late in the third quarter where you go Chris Paul, Jamal Crawford, Redick, Dudley, DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
Assuming DeAndre Jordan has improved the defense enough.
That's a mega small lineup, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got the length inside to deter. You've got shooters all around Chris Paul. Pick and roll big, like... In theory, it could work. It could be really fun.
This is a determining year for me with J.J. Redick, because I was so low on him coming out of college and so impressed with his work ethic under Stan Van Gundy, so impressed with his defense in the playoffs with the Magic, so impressed with his leadership in the years after, and so disappointed last year with his effort on both ends, that this is a big determining year for me to see whether or not his defensive lapses recently have been people have figured him out, or he's physically not able to, or if it was just he was in bad situations and disengaged, and now he's going to be back to ripping around screens, knocking down threes, being a huge part of what this team can do. He could be the difference in them making the finals.
Let me ask you a question. If he was so bad at it last year, just from the simple fact that he saw what happened with Stan Van Gundy, he saw what happened with Dwight, and he just stopped giving a damn,
yeah,
while being in an Orlando Magic jersey, would that bother you?
No, especially I talked to him when he was here, and he was really beat up. I was like, are you okay? And he was like, no, but I'm fine. It was not good. He was physically in really bad shape. And the trade rumors, he took those trade rumors really hard.
Yeah.
He just did, because he loved Orlando. He had made a home there. He had really committed to the community, and he just didn't want the upheaval. I think all he really wants is stability. I think that's one of the reasons that he actually wanted to sign with the Clippers, was less about being in the market and having all the advantages of LA, and more, you got Chris Paul and Doc Rivers. You have a chance for a program there. You're going to be there and have the kind of situation that he's wanted in the pros. He doesn't want to be dangled as trade bait every 6 months.
Right. So. And I think that you can look at him, and please, listeners, do not take this the same, like the wrong way. I think you could look at him being used in that as Ray Allen for the Clippers. I think he could say he could look at Doc Rivers and be like, okay, I saw what he did with Ray Allen. You know, he probably, just because he's a very good shooter and he is confident, like he probably thinks like, I'm as good as Ray Allen is now, and thinks about himself in a similar situation with, you know, Chris Paul being Rondo delivering those passes, and right, you know, he is Ray Allen running around those screens, especially at the end of games.
Yeah.
Getting open. Perfect. Like, I mean, that's probably something that's very appealing to him.
Yeah, it's gonna be great. It's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be a fantastic fit. So overall, they did well. Like I said, like, you know, the B probably should have been a B plus. I went a little low on it.
And I'm not trying to skew it like you gave him a D.
No, but
I feel like maybe came off that way.
Well, it's also like, it's also, oh, they added two really, they focused on adding lots of great shooters. Zach likes it. I'm shocked. Just blown away. If they'd added like nothing but hyper athletic wings that can't do it, or like forwards that can't do anything, I'd be like, I love what this team did.
Right.
Terrific.
They brought back Al Thornton.
Exactly. I love what this team did. By the way, somebody asked me who my favorite players were, and I was joking that it was Marcus Thornton, Al Thornton, and somebody else. And I just started having this image of a team that had Marcus Thornton and Al Thornton on it, Thornton and Thornton. And I've been thinking about that in my head, like, oh, they could just shoot all the time and never play defense.
That does sound really nice.
Yeah, so I think the over-under on this team, I'm really excited when the over-unders come out for the Clippers.
That's
going to be like a really fun one to debate.
I just listened to the BS reports with them doing the NFL over-unders, and the whole time I was like, I just want to do this for the NBA. I can't wait for that podcast. Yeah. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm really excited to do it. It's going to be fun. So RoboCop. That we're talking about personal story. You can turn off the podcast now if you don't like talking about things or not.
Rogue listener who doesn't like our personal stories and attempts at humor. I saw I think you sent it to me. A lot of people sent me the RoboCop trailer. I'm all in. This movie looks incredible.
It got hammered and I was kind of surprised.
It looks great to me. Like, it really looks great. I like that they changed the story enough. At least with how he becomes RoboCop, or at least that's how it looks from the trailer, to where I think that it's just going to be it's the same story, but it's a different way of telling it. Michael Keaton and Sam Jackson are in it. The brief shot of the Ed 209 walking down the street.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that looked incredible. Like, I think it's going to be a really fun action movie.
And I don't mind that he's still sentient or whatever, or still has his he still has his personality.
He's overriding the program. Like, I love this. This is man versus machine, all in one body. Like, this is going to be great.
And I always go for like the intellectual angle on these things, so I'm genuinely fascinated by that concept of what it means for technology and whether technology can reproduce the human condition and things like this. This is stuff that my brother-in-law, who's currently stationed abroad with the Air Force, good luck to him, by the way, it talks about all the time, because he's a really avid philosophical reader, and he's focusing right now on technology, like the singularity, it has all these implications, and yeah, I'm tying RoboCop to the singularity, get on my level. I just think that there's a fascinating impact for how technology relates to it, but yeah, the Ed 209 looks kick-ass. I'm in, man. You know, even with the black suit, I think it's...
I like the black suit. I think, like, to try to just recreate the old RoboCop would have been...
just making the same movie.
Bad.
Yeah.
Like, this is the opposite of putting nipples on the bat suit.
And Gary Oldman.
Yeah, Gary Oldman's in it.
Gary Oldman...
I was, like, immediately... Like, is he the dad from That 70s Show? Is he in that role, or is he in a different role?
What?
The dad from That 70s Show was in the original RoboCop as like the main bad guy.
Oh yeah.
Or at least like the main like goon.
No, he's like the doctor. He's like.
Oh,
he's...
okay. Yeah. I kind of wish he was in that role.
No, Keaton's in that role.
Keaton's in that role?
I'm pretty sure Keaton's in that role.
I thought Keaton was like maybe the higher up. Regardless, I'm a great cast, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, it's I think it'd be fun.
I'm all in on a black RoboCop suit. It's got the light up red bar. It kind of looks like a cool Knight Rider.
Yeah, I like that they kept the gun thing on his hip too.
Yes,
that was the little touches are what you should keep, right?
Absolutely.
You're coming with me, like that one. You know,
I like the implementation of the motorcycle.
Yeah,
this is gonna be great. It's gonna be the best movie since Fast 6.
Of course, now I'm, because you've got me thinking about RoboCop, now I'm like trying to tie in like how Breaking Bad can turn into RoboCop 2.
Okay. We could do that.
Wasn't the drug in that blue?
Yeah, I kind of think it was. I just know that the kid in the movie grew up to be Tony Parker.
They had different kinds. One of them was red. They had like, I think they had like a blue one too.
Yeah, maybe.
Those drugs always looked so like pretty when I was a kid. I was like, oh, those look like really cool.
You're like, oh, cool, I want to do drugs.
Exactly. I was like, oh, those look really neat. But then being drugs.
All right, kids, don't do drugs unless they look cool in RoboCop movies.
All right, I think they'll do for the Clippers off-season review.
Yep, that sounds about right. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Zach.